page on Dal, he deals with the idea of that Adam Rishon spoke Lashon HaKodesh. So you have to understand exactly how that happened. So the pasuk described that Adam Rishon was able to name all of the different Balei Chaim, gave them names. So this is a piece from the Barbanel. In your creation, Adam Shemus, the Chol Balei Chaim, Roy Lion by Moed. This whole process we need to think about a lot. The Kuzari points out, Shaloshan Lakis Habriya Limda Kadosh Baruch Hu Adam. The Rosh taught Adam Rishon Lashon HaKadosh. V'sama al loshana ubiyadin. The Rosh trained him in it. He himself a shlema mikol al loshanas. Lashon HaKadosh is the perfect language. Anoisa likriya yersimikulam. It is a proper name language to use to designate names of the animals, etc. Now, that would mean that the Lashon HaKadosh was existed already. It means that the names of the animals exist in Lashon HaKadosh already. And the Rishon absorbed that and then gave the animals the names. So he wasn't really calling them the names. The puzzle sounds like that he actually chose the name, and which means he created part of the language. So how do we deal with that? So first of all, there's a gorgeous piece from the Sherry Das on this topic that he points out that the Chazal say that the Russian created the world using the 22 letters of the Aleph, which means each one of the letters of the Aleph represents a spiritual. And when you put them together, you're going to create certain realities, which will express himself in a physical way as X. So if I know the properties of all of the different letters, it's like I know the chemical properties of various different chemicals. I can mix and match many different compounds. The results will be quite different. I mean, we see it in our own reality. It's a fascinating thing that to contemplate the idea that you take sodium, right, and you take chlorine, you have this unstable metal which explodes when it hits water, you take this gas which kills you, you put them together, you have salt, which is required. It doesn't look like sodium or chlorine, right? So you can put together different things and create compounds which are totally different than it look very different, but then, so the Baruch Hashem says, I take a little bit of a dalet, a little bit of a vav, a little bit of a base, I put together, I get a bear. Like, why should that be strange to us, right? You know, you mix it together, you shake it up, and out comes a bear, right? So he says that's really what happens. That other region was able to be mavkin. He had such a level of understanding. He looked at each thing, was able to look at the root of its creation. What were the letters which were used to create it? That's how the Sherry Das explains it, which would be along the lines of what the Kuzar is saying. And would answer the Barbanel's question. It's not that the Rishon taught it to him. The Rishon created the world in Lashon HaKadosh. And the Rishon was given the intelligence to understand it, Lashon HaKadosh, and how the letters work. And that he was able to figure out each thing, what was the name for it. But the Psukim seem to indicate that the Rishon, as it were, chose the names in Lashon HaKadosh, and that became the names. He chose it. So he decided to call a bear a dove. That was his decision. Okay. So the Barbanel disagrees with the Kuzari, disagrees with the Rambam. The Rambam says that all the shutters are just basically our convention. You know, they came up with the side we're going to call a bear. Like, you know, it's not really a bear. We all agree that this is the name we're going to call a bear. And now we understand when we say the word bear, we know that that's what you're referring to. But that's because we all agree to it. Right? So it's based on convention. So that's not right either. That he says. So the Barbanel says like this: HaKadosh Baruch Hu bara haloshen. The Rishon created the speech with language. V'higbal said the Rav. Maskim l'tibya the word melidia alakis b'hem. The Rishon made certain systems how they work, which would fit the items that you're referring to. V'chashar yotzer z'adam etzamay. When the Rishon created man, b'tel malakim. That part of the creation of man, the person put into man a neshama, which is with a certain understanding of that, the Kaddish Baruch. The Russian gave him an intelligence to understand the true realities of the world. Maybe limud v'chakira v'chipas klal. He didn't need to contemplate and philosophize and debate and research. He understood it. Adam Rishon was given a natural instinct to understand how the Bria works. So Hashem also put into Adam a natural instinct towards Lashon HaKodesh. So the Bereshit created man, created the world, and he created a bear with a certain nature. The Bereshit created a language which is an intrinsic language, which means it truly describes the nature. The Bereshit put into Adam an intelligence that understands the nature of things. And the Russian put in Adam also a natural instinct to understand how the language of Lashon HaKodesh expresses these things. So the Harishon then was able to use his intelligence to put two and two together and figure out that this is the right name for this thing. The Russian didn't necessarily give it a name beforehand, as he's saying, because Adam chose the name. But Adam chose the name, understanding the reality of what this is, the true reality of what this is, and understanding of the true reality of how Lashon HaKodesh works and how it represents the realities of which exist. Man was created with a natural instinct to be able to declare on everything which is in the world based on that which is ingrained in his being. Understanding the nature of things, and the language that he was going to use would then fit correctly into the Brashim's Chokhmah. So Adam Rishon, who created B'Tzelem Elokim, has a natural instinctive understanding of the world the way the Brashim sees it. So the Rishon was able to sort of tap into the nature of the language. Now, Betzim, if you think about it, like the Mishnah says that one of the things which was created Aristotle's Benish Moshe's was the Ksav and the Mikhtav. Right? If the Rishon had not created an alphabet, like, so where does an alphabet come from? Right? So once you have one alphabet, you can start creating other alphabets. It's that the concept of an alphabet that you represent to certain things, and that, you know. So I think one of the most fascinating things, one of the most fascinating things, in watching a child. How do we learn a new language? How do you learn a new language? How do you learn a new language? Right? And I should be asking Ephraim this question, right? You start with a language that you know, and which you're familiar with, and then you start making connections. Well, this is called a table. Well, and then another language is called something else. But if I don't know what this is, I never saw a table before. Telling me that the table is called a table is an irrelevant. And you know what? It's called a table, and in French it's called
table.
Right? It doesn't mean anything to me. I don't know what. I'm not starting with any understanding of something. Right. I start with one language that I'm familiar with, and from there I can build, you know, hundreds of languages. Great. A child has no familiarity with anything. He doesn't understand anything. So how does he learn a language? He doesn't start with any language. And a child learns a language. Right? That, I think, is one of the most. I believe that's one of the most fascinating things which exists in the process of raising a child, is watching him absorb language. It doesn't make any sense. What the Barbanello is saying is the Bereshit put a nature into man to relate to something with a language. That's part of the creation of Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Bereshit made man with that ability. Specifically, Lashon HaKodesh. So you understand almost when the Chazal say that when the child starts speaking, you should speak to them in Lashon HaKodesh. Right? You understand that Chazal is saying, you know, by doing so, you're going to be strengthening that natural instinct which is inside of the child, as opposed to forcing another language upon him, which is maybe more challenging. The natural instinct of the nature of the neshama of the person is to relate to the world through Lashon HaKadosh. It's part of the makeup of a man. That's what the Bar Bedel is being Mechadosh, a fascinating thought process, an extraordinary thought process. Umuvadzeh, Dibrei Yimar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bo'isa HaLashon. The Rosh Hashanah also spoke to man in that Lashon. Vishmei LaOznoi, Kol Nivra Muchash Megei Elam. Now, when the Rosh Hashanah speaks, the Rosh Hashanah doesn't have a mouth. He doesn't actually... The Rosh Hashanah can put a thought into man's mind. He doesn't need to go through a process of hearing. But the Rosh Hashanah went through the process of hearing. He created a sound. Right? And the Rosh Hashanah had Adam Rishon hear that sound through his ears. So Adam Rishon was able to be in the process of a conversation. The Rosh Hashanah put that concept of speech and language is part of his nature. So he understood what the Rosh was saying to him, and he learned from that. When the Rosh said words to him, the Rosh said, "Don't eat from the tree," which is Techagan. So he learned that the word for that thing is, which looks like this, you know, brown with like things come out of it, is an eitz. Right? He learned the language from the person speaking to him. But he heard the words. He understood what the words were saying. He understood what the Russian was referring to. And he realized there was a sort of natural instinct to that. And therefore, he made connections. He started learning how to speak the language. So really what happened was the Russian was taking out a latent potential which existed in him and bringing it out through the fact that the Rosh Hashanah spoke to him. So the Rosh Hashanah speaking to him was, as it were, part of his training process of learning the language. The person has a natural instinct to understand things. But to actually use it, he needs a process of being taught and being pointed out from someone who's teaching him. It's the same thing when it comes to Lashon. The Rosh put the concept of speech and language as a nature of man. So Rosh spoke to him, he brought that out, that latent potential which is there. When he heard the Rosh's speech, he learned how the language works, and now man became a master of it. He could use it as he saw fit. So the Russian put it to him in a latent potential in his creation, and the Russian brought it out through speaking to him. Okay. But it is correct to point out what the Kuzri was saying. The Rosh created this language. The Rosh taught it to man. It wasn't just like we said, convention. So that's not right. That's not true. So the Russian didn't tell him what to do. On the other hand, another Russian did it himself, but it wasn't just haphazard. It wasn't just b'mikra. It wasn't just, you know, as they say, whatever, right? The names which he came up with based on his natural potential the Russian put in him to understand how things work. And when he heard the Russian's speech, he developed that ability to do it himself, and now he did it. But it's improper to say that Adam Rishon just sort of like developed it as he saw fit. Because Shemtziva almost bar Tzoyisam Mishar Halashanas the last coming years, like all of the languages. Vishilam Seder Hoesus Tivi Imadwar Manimsim Ridios Amitius. There's no connection between the words which we use and the true understanding of what the reality of this item is. But however, the Yerusha Loshan is that Nibra Mimani, his brother Mishra created Loshan HaKadosh. Okay, Nibra Mimani, the Adam, Harisha, the Mishra spoke to him like that, Lekain, Lenoich, Lobos HaKadoshim, but not in the Torah, Menishma, the Nibra Bar Sinai, Nitzah Baluchas, but Nibra Hashem, Moshe, but Torah, Kula, Mila, Bimila, Kishita, Vaisal, Save. This is the language of the Bershom. So, I mean, the Bershom is using it. He's doing it because that's intrinsically the right way. Those are the right words. So, Adam Rishon chose, but Adam Rishon was choosing based on the true understanding of what the reality was. Okay, so that's one thought I wanted to share with you. I just think it's fascinating to think about, like the extraordinary concept of Lashon is a mind-boggling thing. I mean, it would be an interesting question, or I would suggest the following. You know, when I do with my chassan, I always tell them that, you know, the main thing is not what you said, it's what the other person heard. Like, communication is not what you said. You didn't communicate what you said. You communicated what the other person heard. So you better figure out what the other person heard than what you communicated. Right? So, he says, and the problem, of course, is that Chazal said, Noshim Am B'fnei Atzman, it's a different nation. Each nation has the different way that they speak. So, in America, at the end of the meal, when they ask you, do you want some more, and you say, thank you, is different than you in South Africa, when they ask you, do you want something more, at the end of the meal, they say, thank you. The thank you in South Africa means no thank you, in America means thank you, it means yes. Right? So if you say thank you, in America you'll get some more food, and in South Africa you won't. Right? So it's a different language, different culture. So your wife is, women are Noshim, or Ambifnei Atzman, Chazal say they're different culture, a different nation, and they speak differently. That's what I tell the Chassan. So I said, Sir Moshe Shapiro, they put out from him a series of sorim put out by one of the Talmidim called Afikei Mayim. So the Afikei Mayim is a beautiful sefer, but in the Afikei Mayim there's a haskama written by Rav Moshe Shapiro, Zichron Livracha. And the whole sefer is worth it for the haskama. Like, just that alone is worth the whole sefer, you know. So he writes like this. He says that, you're asking me Rishus to put out the Sefer. He says, you have to understand something, that words are not words until I share them with somebody. So in a conversation, you own the words just as much as I do, because you're just as much of an important player in the world of words as I am. Because they're not words unless there's somebody hearing them. So, I'm the Rebbe, you're the Talmud, I say the words and you hear them, we both own the words. Because right. Without you, they wouldn't be words. So you don't need my Rishus to publish the words, because they belong to you. What you do need is to say, well, maybe you got the words wrong, or you got the idea wrong. Now, I trust you as a Talmud Chacham, you know, as a true Talmud, that you know you got it right. That's what he writes. See, he's saying a fascinating thing about the idea of Dibur, again, that's what we're saying. Dibur is not saying words, Dibur is communicating. So it's not considered a Dibur until there is somebody who's hearing it. This leads you to the famous philosophical question about if a tree falls in the forest and nobody hears the sound, did it make a sound? So the scientists will tell you the answer is no, because there's no such thing as a sound intrinsically. Sound is only when the waves come into your eardrums and make the eardrums move and it makes sound. There's no sound in the air. There's waves of air moving, which only create sound when they hit the human being's head. Okay. So that's not what the philosophers were asking. Right? But what he's saying is, I have no idea whether sounds are sounds, but in regards to deeper, a deeper is not a deeper unless there's somebody hearing it. So I'm wondering if that's true in Lashon HaKodesh. So I understand that when I'm speaking in English, which the whole Yisod of English is, it's a davar haskami between all of us to agree that this is what these words mean. So the whole purpose of the language is the communication. That's its whole function. The only reason we need to agree to what the words mean is because otherwise we can't communicate. I have to agree, we all agree this is called a table, this way we can talk about the table, we'll understand each other. If I have no need to communicate to you, I can call whatever I want. I can call thingamabob, you know, well, the thingamabob. Yeah, but what's the thingamabob mean? Well, who cares? Because I'm not talking to you. Right? It's irrelevant that what the word means, that we should all agree to it until you get to the world of communication. Well, Lashon HaKodesh is the intrinsic name of this is a shulchan. That's its name. See, if I call it a shulchan, I'm saying that this is a shulchan, whether you hear it or not, it's irrelevant. Because I'm saying the intrinsic reality which is there. So if I'm pointing out intrinsic reality, whether you hear it or not, I said, in Lashon HaKodesh, I said the reality. In any other language, the whole purpose of the language is the communication, not to describe the reality, but to communicate. So obviously, if there's nobody hearing it, I didn't communicate. So Ramosh on that piece is assuming not like that. Mm-hmm. That at least the concept of deeper requires two parties. But we start the concept of the Lashon is an intrinsic Lashon. So when I speak in Lashon HaKodesh, as opposed to speak, so it's a whole different experience of deeper of a speech with the deeper, but it's a whole different process of speech than speaking any other language. I think that's a fascinating Nakuda to think about, the power of Lashon HaKodesh. Lashon HaKodesh is, you're tapping into the true intrinsic reality which is there, which doesn't exist in any other language.
How do you apply that if you talk to yourself or you take notes for yourself?
So you find this concept by tefillah. So a person, you know, the more it talks about with different more simple, we paskin that the tefillah, shema, etc., it has to be said loud enough that you can hear it. What that's saying is that really you're talking to yourself, right? So there is two parties.
You and yourself.
You and yourself. Right? You are saying something and you are hearing it. In other words, you're communicating an idea to yourself. I think that's really what tefillah is. Tefillah is the process of communicating an idea to yourself. Wow. Right? Hirsch says that the whole word that he spalel is reflexive. It's to create an understanding back to yourself. So we lose sight of these realities. We express them to sort of make ourselves hear. And we spoke about this. We talk about vidui, that the whole reason why vidui has to be said bepeh, it's not enough just to think.
Right.
Is because I tell you over the Chabad Chaim. Chabad Chaim has the physical reality and the spiritual reality parallel each other. The Rosh Hashanah did that for a reason, because we need to know that certain realities exist. We don't know that they exist sometimes without having the spiritual realities, unless the physical reality. So he explains, the Maral says in Netzach, I'm sorry, the Maral says in Gevuras, that why the Rosh Hashanah, there's the Pesach is the Chodesh Aviv, it's springtime, Shavuos is a Chag HaKotzir, and Sukkot is Chag HaOsif. So, why are we calling them by these harvest names? So, the Maral, as is wont, did not want to, you know, lower the Torah down to harvest, you know, to this agricultural society where we're having festivals in honor of the different stages of the agricultural year. It's all the way around. The Bereshit made a spiritual reality of the certain power of renewal which comes in Pesach. And there's a certain power of sort of absorbing and taking messages in which comes Sukkot time. Now, how do you know that? How would you know that exists? So there's a Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara says, if I give a matana to somebody, when I give a person stock, I should do it anonymously. When I give a person a present, the purpose of a present is to create love, friendship. So doing it honestly doesn't do that. So specifically, I'm not allowed to do it. I'm supposed to do it specifically, not anonymously. Matter of fact, the a lot of poskim can assume that shalach manas, which is given anonymously, you're not yet to shalach manas, because the purpose of shalach manas is to create friendship in Klal Yisrael. So I know that someone out there likes me. You know, that's nice. You know, but I don't know who. Right? You know, I thought everybody in the world hated me. Now I know at least one guy in the world likes me. You know, right? But if a person leaves on my doorstep, leaves the shalach manos because I'm out delivering and I come back and there's the shalach manos, I don't know who it came from. The guy wasn't used to shalach manos according to some poskim. If he leaves his name out there, oh, no, I know, it's some Yankel. Oh, Yankel. So nice, Yankel. I have good friends now, Baruch Hashem, right? So Moore says, okay, so I give you a present. I should be Madiya you, what I'm doing. I once heard from Rabbi Dimelis at Sal. He says, let's say I give a person a watch. The good old days, how many jewels are in the watch, right? You know, 21 jewels, 17 jewels, right? Leave the little note inside that you should know this is a 21 jewel watch. Let him know that you really spent a lot of money on him. Because the point that we hear is the friendship. So he doesn't know how valuable his watch is. He knows this is a very valuable watch. There's more friendship created by that. Let him know that.
There's a price tag on it.
He didn't say leave the price tag. That's, you know.
Maybe we should start doing that.
$4.99. $4.99. You know, Walmart special. You know, like, no, don't do that. No, right.
Well, if it's expensive, should I?
But see, so okay. Let's say I take care of your child. So how do you know that I did that? So the Morris says a very funny Gemara. The Morris says, if Reuven, takes care of Shimon's child, when Reuven sends the kid back, the kid's not going to tell his parents because that's how kids are, you know. What happened tonight? Whatever, nothing, Oh, it's my Reuven's house today. Like, they're not going to tell you that, So you should leave a little smudge of food on the kid's forehead. Take the peanut butter and jelly and smear it on his forehead. So it comes almost and says, like, what's going on? Where'd you get the peanut butter? Why is the peanut butter different? He says, oh, it's Rabbi Rangel's house and he gave me lunch. Oh, that's so nice. Right? So the whole thing is to be Madia. So the Russian did the same thing. He informed us that there's a spiritual power of renewal in Pesach time by making the world physically come back to life. That's how he's informing us of the Matana that he gave the power of spiritual renewal Pesach time. The Russian gave us a power of absorbing and bringing things in Sukkot time. The Russian made a physical reality which corresponds to that to inform us of the Matana that he gave us, that we were able to absorb lessons Sukkot time. That's how he explains it. So the Russian made a spiritual reality. The tongue, the nature of the tongue is that it magnifies. You take a little speck of, little pebble, little piece of gravel, and your tongue, it feels like it's a gigantic thing in your mouth. You spit it out, you're like, wow, like a hair. You have a hair in your mouth. It's like, it's a little dinky hair. It comes out like it. It's like, wow, the little dinky thing made so much pain, frustration. It says, that's true in a spiritual sense also. That when you have a thought, and it's not 100% clear, when you speak it out, the tongue magnifies all of the improperty, the elements of which were improper. It just doesn't sound right. It doesn't come out right. That's part of the power of the tongue, is to find the flaw. But you don't have the flaw when you're just thinking in your head. When you speak it out, the nature of the speech is that it becomes real. It makes it into something much bigger than it is itself. Vidui is the process of a person taking this thought, which is inside of his being, and sort of like taking it out of his being and saying, look, this is what I did. When I speak it out, it becomes much more real to me. And male, it affects me much more. I can't believe I did this. As long as it's in your head, it's somewhat nebulous. Right? When you speak it out, I did this. I'm talking to myself. But when I speak it out, it becomes a reality which is being communicated to me. So it's possible to have a process of speaking to yourself where you actually are communicating something more than what you thought back to yourself through speech. Making sense? Yeah? Okay, so we're communicating over, I think, the whole. Right? Okay.
What about Ivrit relative to Lashon HaKodesh? Is Ivrit intrinsic?
is Ivrit intrinsic? So Ivrit is not.
So when you speak to a child in university, you should talk. If you're speaking Ivrit, are you fulfilling that?
Are you fulfilling that? To some extent, I mean, some of the words are words of Lashon HaKodesh, you know, and even our yeshivish language that we use, called yeshivish, we also have some words of Lashon HaKodesh that we use. again, the Pashat Taich of Chazal is that, you know, you want to make his most basic language a language which will allow him to learn Torah. This way you're giving him a one-up on the world of learning Torah, like which the Maisa Ivrit does do that. A child who grows up speaking Ivrit, you know, much picks up a sefer, as much easier time reading it than somebody grew up, you know, until you get used to it. That advantage in learning extends till about, you know, assuming that you have a young man who has good potential and he really works, he learns well, etc., till about the age of 20, 21. After that, it makes almost no difference in the learning ability. And I think maybe that's because they learned Ivrit. They didn't learn, you know, even Ivris is not, you know, Ivris. It's Lashon HaKodesh is a different language. I mean, Ivrit, Ephraim, you can help me out with this, you know, is Ben Yehuda made his dictionary, which is the foundation of modern Ivrit. I mean, he based it on some things from Gemara, some things from Tanakh, some things from Medrash, some things which he just made up words. You know, sometimes the ideas were very, you know, were very tenuous, and he needed to come up with the words. He came up with the word. You know, the Ivrit word for jelly is Riva, right?
Riba,
right? Where did it come from? Right. It says, well, because I'll say that, you know, that by Stone, that they took a girl and they smeared her with honey, and that brought the bees and that killed her because she had done the terrible act of, you know, take care of an honey. It talks about Riva Achas, but Riva over there actually means a young girl. But since they smeared her with something, you know, jelly-like, so they used that word, that became the word for jelly. So, you know, so that's Ivrit. You know,
but traditionally, people recently didn't speak Lashon. I mean, spoke Yiddish in Europe, right? So why didn't they speak Lashon Kodesh if that's the Chazal?
You know,
you don't see people speaking Lashon Kodesh.
You don't see people speaking Lashon Kodesh.
Even in Israel, they speak modern Hebrew when they speak.
Yeah, it's you know, I don't have a good answer to the question. I think that, you know, somewhat the assumption was that the language is there's interesting Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says, the Rosh Hashanah should have made man with two mouths.
One for good and one for bad.
One for learning Torah.
Yeah, that's right.
And one for secular usage. Yeah. The Rosh Hashanah didn't do that because we'd end up using both of them for Lashon Hara. That's what the... Imagine having two mouths. You know, you have Lashon Hara, you could say, you know, like, you know, it's like, you know, double the Lashon Hara. I think somewhat the feeling with that Lashon HaKodesh was it's a language which we use for tefillah and for learning, etc. It shouldn't be that we're going to be using just in all of our... There had to be another language to use in all of your secular...
Yeah, but that goes against this because the child is not learning it this way. I mean, nobody's teaching...
Yeah, I understand. I'm just saying, you know, that's like where the thought process came from, but, you know... You know, you get these people, the Yiddish purists, they say, you know, we need to go back to having Yiddish. I mean, the reason, the strength of Yiddish, why Yiddish was so significant, wasn't because it's a holy language, per se, is because it is a language that developed a lot of the understanding of learning, a lot of the Jewish hargeshim towards the world, towards mitzvah, etc. Words were developed in Yiddish, which expressed those. So it was a language which its function that sort of these things almost came natural. You know, the way you would, so when you would explain a certain concept in Yiddish, it comes across very naturally. In English, it takes you, like, you know, three times the amount of words to explain it. And it's like very frustrating because, like, you know, I can say it so easily in Yiddish, but in English I have to, like, you know, go on to explain it. You know, maybe I would have a command of this extraordinary Harvardian English, maybe it wouldn't help me because nobody else understands, even though I do understand Harvardian, but nobody else does, you know. So that's the mile of Yiddish. It's a very funny thing. I'll just tell you a funny story. Like, you know, I went to Tel Zeshiva. So in Tel Zeshiva, when I came in Tel Zeshiva, so the shmuzin in the high school were in Yiddish. And the oldest shir in the high school was in Yiddish. All the shir and base manager were in Yiddish. The shmuzin and base manager for sure were obviously in Yiddish. And then you spoke the reshiva in Yiddish. Mm-hmm. I didn't know a word of Yiddish. I mean, I didn't know a word of anything. But, you know, I came to Tel Zeshiva. I had, Baruch Hashem, at that point in time, learned 3 blot of Gemara before I came to Yeshiva. And I finished learning Aleph Beis in January, and I came to Yeshiva in August. So, like, it wasn't like I had so much opportunity to learn a lot before I came to Yeshiva. So I went to the Shmuz, and I had a person translate for me. And that's why I learned Yiddish. But eventually, you got to the point where your Yiddish ability was, you know, you'd speak to Rishivas and you'd converse with them in Yiddish. So my Yiddish was all the world of Torah. You know, some basic words, etc. So I once met somebody, and the person was asking, do I speak Yiddish? I said, yeah. So he wanted to know, like, certain, like, not nice words, how you say them in Yiddish. I said, I don't know. that was, like, you know, the whole geschmack is learning these words in Yiddish. And you can call somebody some, you know, not nice name behind their back, you know, because you can speak Yiddish. Like, that was their thought process, and I said, I'm sorry, I can't help you. Like, apparently there is that whole dark side of Yiddish also, right? Which I didn't, you know, even, like, I never even thought about it. It was just like, it wasn't even on my radar screen, that there's this whole other side of it. The secular Yiddishists, you know, they have these plays, they have, the language is pretty coarse, so they have really not nice things to say, and not clean things to say, and they say it in Yiddish. You know, so that part is not, you know, that's not, you know, it reflected all of the reality of life out there, the good and the bad. Lashon HaKodesh, the Rambam says, it's called Lashon HaKodesh because it doesn't have, certain words just don't exist. Certain, you know, elements of, you know, unclean elements don't exist in the Lashon. The Yiddish can't claim that. But it's fascinating to me. I never even thought about that until this person asked me the question. And I was quote unquote fairly fluent in Yiddish. I mean, I got a comment from one of the Rebbetzins who grew up in Europe. Like, so her Yiddish was her mama Lashon. She complimented me on my ability to speak Yiddish. I used to read because of my stomach issues, I couldn't eat the Shiva lunches because the doctor put me on a diet which was no fruits and vegetables, shouldn't be any, like, things irritating the intestine. I couldn't have milk because I had lactose intolerant. I couldn't have fried foods because they're not really cooked well. I couldn't have spicy foods. So yeshiva lunch is either milk, spicy, fried, or fresh fruits and vegetables. So I couldn't eat lunch in yeshiva, so I used to go to one of the Rebbetzins every day for lunch. For 5 years, I ate lunch break. Basically, I ate there, come out every single day of the year for 5 years. So she would make, you know, once, twice a week she was serving flashings, you know, chicken, something even meat, you know, but then, you know, or fish, different things, etc. So she wouldn't sit with me. Her husband wasn't alive. The husband passed away 3 weeks after I started going there. But I still came there every... I tell you a beautiful story. The day she got up from Shiva, I didn't come for lunch. I couldn't imagine coming for lunch the day a woman just got up from Shiva from her husband. I got a message... By medical time, her son came to yeshiva, like, where were you? My mother was waiting for you. Like, you know, shiva shiva, but a crisis is a crisis. So now it's her crisis, take care of you. So, you know, what do you mean you didn't come for lunch? She said, did you eat lunch? I said, no, I didn't eat lunch. She said, go right now. So I went, you know, after medical time, because I couldn't, like, she was waiting for me. She made lunch. I was like, I just wasn't expecting that.
Wow.
Very, very holy woman, but. The halacha is that, you know, she wouldn't eat with me because, you know, it wasn't appropriate, you know. So, and she wouldn't sit with me because the Rambam says you're not supposed to look at somebody while they're eating because they're uncomfortable. So she would serve me, she would say hello, and then she would walk into a different room. So what did she have to read over there? She had those Yiddish words. You know, she read, you know, the Yiddish things. So I used to sit and read the Yiddish magazines. That's how I, like, you know, learned my Yiddish.
That's cute.
You would sit there and, you know, you'd figure it out from context. So you'd, you know, sound out the words and see if you heard it before. You know, so that I learned a lot of it from that. But again, but that was all my world of this Kedusha Dika world of Yiddish. I really was upset at that person when they asked me the question. Like, you know, like, you could ask me such beautiful things you can talk about in this language, which expresses such beautiful thoughts. You want to know how to say, like, not night, like, you know, really? That's all you want to know?
Wow.
Like, you know, really? You know? Okay. Okay, that's one thought I want to show you. Let's move towards the end of the parsha. Page 69. So mankind lives very long. The Pesukim talk about these extraordinary lifetimes that these people had. So the first one is the Rambam. Mashal kosa by a Torah mimidus yimei anoshim mahem. These individuals, how long they lived, and the armor shalohaya mina mahem elohisha hu and his kulavari. It wasn't all mankind that lived these long, it was these individuals. They lived a regular average life. That which was extraordinary about this man, that he lived very long. Maybe because he had very special types of food and the way he treated himself. Because he did something extraordinary, the Russian gave him this present. Fine. That's what the Rambam says. So the Rambam says, the next paragraph, it says, I don't get it. If you're talking about these big tzaddikim, the Russian, you know, I get it. But they weren't. Some of them were quite not tzaddikim. Some of them were, some of them weren't. But they still had these long lives. So why do they deserve to have these long lives if that's what it's about? And if it's because they lived a certain lifestyle, so there's only each generation, only one person copped that lifestyle. Like, so I don't get it. Okay. So again, this is the Barber note. So he says that the next page. When the Rambam says it was a nace, so Rabban says, like, why do they deserve the nace? The Bershom did it as something extraordinary. It wasn't that the Bershom wanted to give them a matana because they deserved it as a skus. That they deserved a reward, because the Rabban's kasha was they weren't such big tzaddikim. It was good for mankind. For two purposes. The harbors Ishe Hamin, the longer people lived, the more opportunity they had to have children. So the pasuk says that, so for argument's sake, they were having a child a year. So the person lives to be 500, got a lot of kids. So Viva Emes Siba Mitis Atzmis Lukukha Miteba Briya Rishana Lapliusa. So this was something the Russian wanted to have, the nature of the world, to have the ability to have this extended time to allow man to really populate the world well.
That's interesting.
Okay, allow them to develop, get knowledge. That's the purpose of man. How do you learn? You test things, right? You don't know, so you test, right? So imagine you want to develop the wheel, right? You want to come with this idea of something, you know, you don't know what it's supposed to look like, right? You know, I have all the cartoons about the square wheel, you know, right? So you try a square wheel, you try a triangle wheel, and finally you figure out, it takes time. They didn't have phenomenal tools to make these things. So the person dies in the middle of his testing process. So now what? He says, no problem. You got 800 years to figure this out. Keep going, you know? So you have time to work things through. If people lived only to the short lifespans that we live, they would have died before they had a chance to really figure things out.
Right.
It takes a long time to contemplate and really get from the beginning to the end. So you can't really ask somebody to take it over from you, because right. So now we document and we research and we document the documents, and we hope that if the experiment doesn't make it to the end for whatever reason, somebody else will pick it up, right? And you publish. Well, you didn't necessarily, they didn't have that option, you know. So how does he communicate all of the different ideas that he's tried and different things that you worked? It's a tremendous amount of, well, as long as he's alive, he doesn't have to communicate anything. You just forget it. Just do it yourself. These men, who for whatever reason maybe were people which were more masugal to figure things out, lived a longer life. Once one person figured it out, he could teach it to everybody else. That doesn't take that long at all. It takes a lot of time to figure out the solution. Once you know it, explaining it to somebody goes much quicker. Right. So I don't need everybody to live these long lives. I need some people to live their long lives to have the time to work these things through, and then they should share with the rest of mankind. Okay. Once mankind reached a stage where a lot of things have been figured out, the Russian said there's no need to have these extraordinarily long lives anymore. The days became shorter. We're relying on all the information which we already received from these people beforehand.
Do you know what they did? What did Adam HaRishon do for his someone in your life?
What?
What did Adam HaRishon do for his 930 years?
What did he do? I don't know. But he's saying, you know, he sat there and contemplated whether it was issues on a physical level or was issues on a spiritual level. He thought about them and he tried to figure out how to deal with them, right? Because I'll say that Noach was the one who was able to imam see the plow. Right. So he helped mankind by creating a whole new way how to cultivate something.
Okay.
Right. But what other than that, I don't know. But okay. Okay. So that's there's a downside to this. So what happens? These individuals, you know, some of them really, really were extraordinary. We have, you know, Mr. Shalach, Mr. Tzadik. We have Chanoch. Some of them were, some of them were not. So every gift is a two-edged sword. I mean, I'm a procrastinator. Imagine a person knows he's living to about 800, 900 years old, like, you know. Don't worry, I'll get to 300 years from now. Like, you know, like, the temptation for procrastination is very, very significant. I'll get to it later. Right. So they had to be driven with a drive to work this out. And, you know, and then when they figured A out, they wanted to be driven to figure out B. Otherwise, this system is not going to work. So Rabbi Victor Miller in his spiritual chumash says this is The downside of this is that man, you become lazy, indolent, you become gaivadik. You know, I can live for so long. So you know, and you instead of using the tremendous gift as a gift, it becomes a source of a tekola to the person. And that's why mankind, that's part of the decline of mankind, was this issue that they didn't appreciate the gift. One of the scariest things about ever, ask any person in the world to stop and think, what is the most valuable thing that he has and that the Russian gives him in his life, right? His life. So we take life for granted. Air is probably the most important thing that we need in the world. I can't live without it.
Right.
Do we ever contemplate how much air, you know, how valuable air is to them? No, but a person who has emphysema does. Or a person who's a diver, who's right. Under the water, and he has a limited amount of air,
right.
When it's limited, you value it.
Mm-hmm.
When it's not limited, you don't value it. So when he realizes that he has 5 minutes of air left, and he's five minutes away from the surface, he better get back, otherwise he's going to be in big trouble. Or he's actually 7 minutes away from the surface, he's in big trouble,
mm-hmm.
Right? All of a sudden, the air becomes extremely valuable to him.
Right.
So the upside of this is a tremendous opportunity. The downside of it is that you lose sight of the value of life. Life is... So you can just waste it on whatever. I once heard from Rabbi Victor Miller on one of his tapes. He said over the following story. Now, if you ever listen to his tapes or listen to a few of them, he was a straight shooter, like all the way, and he had no problems like saying whatever had to be said. It just like just didn't faze him. So he gets up and says the following story. He says he was by a chast. They asked him to speak by a chast, and usually many, many places the minute was that somebody would speak by the chasten during the meal. In Toronto, to this day, the minute is somebody speaks during the meal by the chasten. It's a beautiful thing, you know. I was like, somebody should get up and say, praise the Kodesh Baruch Hu, you know, something nice about the chasten kal, you know, short to our Torah. If the guy gets up and speaks for 25 minutes, it's a problem. You know, you have to have seichel. So Rabbi Miller was saying that he was by a chasten, and they asked him to speak. He spoke about Yom HaMavis by the chasten. Right?
So that went over well.
So he says that afterwards that Batkin got up. So Batkin, how do you explain a Batkin to every person who doesn't know Batkin? Batkin was a Yiddish concept. The Baichasna, there was a person, Baichasna, who his role was a few things. He was from entertainment, Baichasna. But a good Batkin would, on the spot, be able to say the ideas they wanted to say in rhyme, with using like, you know, my memory Chazal and Psukim, etc. I had a chaver in Yeshiva, his father was a Batkin, and he was able to do that. He was like, the man was like, he just had that type of mind. It's like, you know, so the Chassidus HaMinhag is that the Batkin speaks by the Kabbalah's part of him, he gives Musa to the Chosin in rhyme about, he knows, he researches the Chosin about what his strengths are, what he gives him Musa by the Kabbalah's part of him, he gives him Musa by the Chosin's dish. He has to be working the tshuva and working himself before he goes to the Chuppah. During the meal, he says something light, you know, make everybody laugh a little bit. And then at the end, they have the, by Chassidim, they have the Mitzvotans. See, each person is called up. It's the way Mitzvotans work. You remember Mitzvotans? Mitzvotans is really interesting minig. That the chosin and the kala and the chosin sit there. The kala sits there, and different people, which are, you know, members of the family, are called up to dance in front of the kala. And eventually, the final one is the chosin dances with the kala directly. This is chassidus shemini. So. Judge can show you. He has pictures. He went to Kloisenberger Chas, and he has pictures of the Mitzvotans. The Mitzvotans goes hours.
Oh wow!
So by the Mitzvotans, so each person was called up by the Batkin. So the Balatan does research on each person, and he calls him up, you know, giving him his kavod with psukim and with, you know, with rhyme, etc. And he's called up in honor to honor us by dancing in front of the kala. The kala holds a gartel, and the other person dances with the gartel with the kala in front of the kala. She sits still, and he, you know, dances in front, holding on the gartel. So that's so he says that the Balatan goes after says, Rabbi Miller made everybody sad. I'm going to make you all happy. And he says some silly jokes. That's how Rabbi Victor Miller says over the story. He says, I'm making them happy. The Yarmulke is not something sad. The Yarmulke is to tell us that life is limited. Use it well. Take advantage of it. It makes you happy. Okay. When you waste life, you don't feel good about it. When you use life well, you feel good about it. I'm making you happy, not sad. That's what he said. So, this bracha, this pella, this matana is very, very challenging to use it right. We have live in a world of abundance of food, so we waste food. We don't appreciate the value and importance of food. You live in a world where you have abundance of all these different materials, so we just waste them, as opposed to feeling the tremendous bracha in our lives that we have these things so easily available. Right. We just don't get it. When a person sees or also realizes that that's not true anymore, that's when he starts appreciating it. When it's limited or when it's gone, so we say, "Wow, you know, it's so nice what I had." Like, you know, now you say that. Like, you know. Okay, let's hold it here.